3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Thanks for being here once again. I'm very, very excited about this edition of the podcast. No game yesterday, obviously, an off day, so nothing to recap, but a lot to preview as the Mariners take on the defending world champion, Kansas City Royals. So we'll take a quick look at what is happening over the weekend. Mark Simon is going to be here from ESPN. Really fun conversation. We'll talk about Taijuan Walker, which is a lot of fun to talk about at this point. We'll talk the Mariners' start, where they fit in the division, the Houston Astros, a little bit of catch framing, also hard hit rate. So a lot with Mark Simon. He's one of my favorite people to talk to, and it's great. I think you'll enjoy it. So that comes up in a few minutes. Also, Greg Green will be here. He's going to talk about what is coming up at Safeco Field, including some big giveaways this weekend. That's going to come up. He'll chat with Aaron Goldsmith. And finally, one of the things I unearthed during this past offseason, a conversation between Rick Riz and the great Vin Scully. And he talks about how he got started in the business and some Brooklyn stories, and it is fantastic. So I am really excited about this podcast. I hope you enjoy it. So the Mariners taking on the Kansas City Royals, the first of three over the weekend. And this is a series, especially given how the Mariners have started, that I'm really looking forward to. The Royals right now, 12-9 on the season. They have lost three games in a row. In second place now in the Central. The White Sox really surging, 16-7 now on the season. And they've opened up a three-game lead, albeit early, on the Royals. Kansas City is playing really well at home, 8-3, but below 500 on the road, 4-6 so far on the road. Of course, the Mariners, 11-10 on the season. They've won four straight series, but certainly will be a tall task to take a series from the defending World Series champions. But here's how it lines up. First of all, Felix Hernandez on a Friday night, King's Court at Safeco Field against the defending world champions. Yeah, this should be fun. Felix 1-2 with a 1.80 ERA on the season. He'll take on Chris Medlin. Medlin this year 1-1 with a 6.00 ERA. He's actually faced the West twice already and has pitched well. At Houston, 2 earned in 5 innings. At Oakland, 1 earned in 6 1/3. But really struggled his last time out against Baltimore. Only lasted 3 2/3, gave up 9 hits and 7 earned runs. So his ERA took a big hit. Had a 2.38 going into that ball game. Now it's ballooned to 6. So we'll see what the Mariners can do against Medlin. But man, the King on Friday night at Safeco Field. I hope you have plans to be there. Should be a lot of fun from the safe. Saturday, remember, the start's pushed back. It's now a 7:10 first pitch from Safeco Field. Originally, it was going to be a 6:10 first pitch, now a 7:10. Keep in mind, Viada closed this weekend. Sounders game in the middle of the day, so give yourself plenty of time to get to the ballpark. Ventura going to go for the Royals. He's got a giant arm. 2-0 with a 2.35 ERA. Electric stuff. He'll take on Wade Miley, 1-2 with a 7.04 ERA on the season. And then on Sunday, I think we're all excited, first day in May, as Taijuan Walker will take the mound again, a 1-10 first pitch. He'll go against Ian Kennedy, who has been excellent so far this year. Kennedy 2-2 with a 2.77 ERA. Taijuan Walker has been nothing short of sensational. 2-0 with a 1.44 ERA. And I was looking at some stuff on Walker, and the thing that is so striking to me, and it seems like he's been around for a long time now because, well, he's over 40 starts in the big leagues, but consider this. Off to a great start, clearly. One of the best first months in Mariners history, second best ERA for any starter with at least 4 starts in Mariners history with the 1.44. But just to keep this in mind, when you're watching Walker pitch, He is the fifth youngest starter in the American League to have made a start this year. The fifth youngest. And two of those that are younger just made their Major League debuts and threw their first start within this last week. So when you're watching Walker, what he's doing so far, just keep that in mind. And he's doing it at this young age. And again, we're going to talk to Mark Simon about Taiwan Walker in just a few minutes, because I am interested. He's starting to get the attention nationally as well. Mark Simon certainly has noticed. He wrote up something on Walker after his last start, and I've seen some other things pop up about Taiwan Walker. He's starting to get the attention. And in my mind, he has worked himself into that group of young up-and-coming star pitchers. I mean, there's a lot of them. I mean, Fernandez and Syndergaard and Walker, and, you know, maybe he's not pitching at the same level as Syndergaard, but, I mean, who is, really? But he is in that group of the young, up-and-coming stars in terms of pitching in this game. And, I mean, that's where I think he is. And I know that's a big statement, but that's where I think he's headed. Salazar, you know, pitchers like that. He's in that cluster. I mean, from there, I mean, you can, if you were to rank him out, who knows where he would be, but he's in that group of the young stars in the game. I mean, that's where he is, especially when you consider the age and what he's doing right now. So I'm anxious to see how he responds to the success he's had so far and what he'll do against the Kansas City Royals. He's been so much fun to watch. And Day Baseball, Safeco Field, oh, man, this is going to be a fun series. Felix, Walker, Royals, hope you make plans to be at Safeco Field. So that's this weekend. Now, let's welcome in Mark Simon. Well, now we get a chance to visit with one of our favorites, Mark Simon. You know him so well from ESPN Stats and Info, the blog, which is fantastic. And follow him on Twitter as well, at MSimonESPN. And, Mark, before we get going, you're an author now officially, so congratulations on your book that just came out.
Thank you.
Yankee book, so yeah, check it out if you.
Yeah, I was going to say that there aren't probably aren't too many Mariner fans that are going to want to read the Yankee Index, but if you do, Triumph Books, it'll be out June 1st. Check it out. A lot of stories, a lot of stats, a lot of fun.
You never know. And again, congratulations. I know how much work you've put in. So
thank you.
Well, let's talk some Mariners. And you wrote a nice piece about Taiwan Walker a couple of starts ago, and then he just turned in another dominant start. He has been fantastic to start the season. What have you seen from Taiwan Walker so far this year?
Okay, a couple of things with him. One is the fastball is what it's been both when he came up. It's the same pitch now in terms of effectiveness. He's able to get it into the mid to high 90s. But the other pitches are developing, and this is something that Mel Stottlemyre Jr. Talked about in spring training, that the curveball wasn't there yet. Well, right now it looks like it's there. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that the change or the splitter or whatever you want to call it, he knows that that's his number two pitch, and thus far this season, that pitch has been totally unhittable. So it's gone from being pretty good, I guess, which is where it was last year, early part of the season, to very good toward the end of the season when he pitched a lot better than he did at the start of the season, to outstanding and a dominant pitch, a pitch that he can finish years off with. And now that he's got three pitches, it makes him more unpredictable, and as a result, it makes him better.
It's interesting to look at him. There's so many good young pitchers in Major League Baseball right now. You know, Syndergaard and everyone else. The list is pretty long. Where does Taiwan Walker fit with some of the young stars in terms of pitching in Major League Baseball?
It's funny because you have to remember that he is still so young because
yes.
he got the recall at such an early age. So he's in that same kind of age group that someone like Syndergaard is in. And I think this is something that Mel was trying to emphasize when I talked to him. There's still a lot of room for growth. Mm. So I think he's in a good place. I don't know that he's necessarily at the top of the line among the guys that are 23, 24, but he's kind of closing in, and I think that's a pretty good place to be.
Yeah, you mentioned, I think I have him as the 12th youngest pitcher to start a game this year in Major League Baseball, and I think he's only separated by 10 days by Syndergaard in terms of age, which I think is kind of interesting. But
yeah, the other thing with him is the strikeout to walk rate's been unbelievable, and that was something that I think you saw in pieces last season, but you're now seeing it kind of be put to completion. when he was at his best last year, the strikeout to walk was like 10 to 1, and right now it's like 8 to 1, and that's really impressive.
And he has been fantastic, and he's been a big part of this Mariners start, and it's been a pretty good start for the Mariners. They sit towards the top in the AL West. What have you seen from the Mariners in general so far this year?
Well, you have the same issue that you always seem to have, which is that the ballpark tends to rob you of some hard-hit balls that become outs, and I think that that a couple of guys have fallen victim to that in the early part of the season. But the AL West seems to be fairly there for the taking. There isn't necessarily a dominant team. I didn't think that the Rangers were a dominant team. And if you can put out a good 1-2-3, Walker, Hernandez, Iwakuma, although Hernandez at the top, Walker is the two, Iwakuma is the three, I think you got a pretty good shot. And I know that Felix has had his issues start of the season with some wildness. Kuma's had his issues a little bit. I think if they get that, and Walker is as good as advertised, I think you're going to be in the hunt. And then as an added bonus, if Nate Karns can do what he did the other night or last night, I think you're in pretty good shape. You do have some bullpen issues. You got to wonder how long Benoit's going to be out. T-Shicks looked good. But I would feel good, even though it's not like you're not like 14-7. I would feel pretty good with 11-10.
Yeah, no doubt. It's really interesting, too, to look how the division is shaking out, especially with the start the Astros have had. Just not a great start, a talented team, but what do you think of them so far?
All right, so their biggest issue this season thus far has been that Keuchel and McHugh have not been what they were in the past. Mm-hmm. Keuchel's got a 4.4 ERA. He's lost a couple of miles an hour off his fastball. Now, he didn't throw that hard to begin with, but when you combine the fact that he's lost velocity and the pitches are hanging more up in the strike zone, it's made him a lot more hittable. His strikeout to walks 2-1. That's not good for him. And then the other guy, Colin McHugh, has gotten roughed up a couple of times. You saw him last night. He looked a little better, but the ERA is still 6-6 through five starts. Those guys, McHugh was a 19-game winner last year. Keuchel was a 20-ish game winner, and the Cy Young. Those guys have been mediocre so far. They're a combined 4-6, and I think you would have expected that they would be 8-2 at this point. And if they're 8-2, you're 11-11, and you're not worried. So that would be, I think, the primary thing. The other thing is they have some offensive issues, like the Mariners. They're striking out a ton, as they always do. They're hitting the home runs, but they're not putting as many guys on base. And I think that that if you're going to play a guy who hits 130 and a guy who hits 190 and another guy who's hitting 200 in Gomez, it doesn't necessarily matter how good Correa is because he only gets one shot every nine times through. You have some issues.
Keuchel's an interesting case. Do you put any stock into his home run splits, considering the ballpark he plays in is not the greatest park to pitch in, yet he is so much more successful at home? It is such an odd thing the last couple of years.
Yeah, I don't really have a good explainer for that. I think that it's just one of those kooky quirks. It's a 1-6 difference for his career. And I'm just looking at his season right now. Thus far this year, 4 starts on the road, 5.8 ERA. Only the 1 start at home, and he threw 8 scoreless. So maybe that's a part of it. Maybe he's just more comfortable.
Yeah.
You never know with the mental approach of a guy that maybe it just really makes a difference for him to be pitching in Minute Maid, and he can execute the way that he wants to execute.
Well, a couple of minutes ago, you mentioned hard hit rate, and I love talking to you about hard hit rate because you're always on this. And I remember last year when we had this conversation, you talked about Cano and his hard hit rate early on in the season. It was there. The numbers weren't, but then he came on despite being banged up and had a really good second half. What have you seen? I know it's early, but what have you seen from hard hit rate so far this season? What's piqued your interest?
All right. When you're talking Mariners, I think that it's interesting that the guy who's at the top is Leonis Martin, even though he's only hitting 200. So that tells me that he may have had a couple of balls that should have been. I think I looked at his spray, and it was 2 balls that were hit to the warning track that could have been out, depending on the park that he was in, and then a line drive on the infield that happened to get snagged. If he had 3 more hits, he might feel maybe he wouldn't be as worried about the 200 batting average. So that was one. Cano's number is he's second best on the team right now. I think it's a number that's around what you would expect it to be. And again, I think the hits will come for him in bigger numbers eventually, that you just have to kind of be patient and ride out the hard hit rate. in terms of major league perspective, I guess early on, surprise, surprise, Bryce Harper's Bryce Harper. He's fantastic. A couple of guys at the top that I think maybe you wouldn't necessarily expect to be at the top. Logan Forsyth is one from the Rays. Michael Conforto from the Mets is actually the leader and has been the leader for the last week or so. He's a guy that your classic number three hitter who hits a lot of line drives. Second this year so far is David Ortiz, which is no surprise.
Wow, that's impressive. I know you've been working, too, on catcher framing, and this is one of my favorite subjects because I am fascinated by this, and I'm glad we're diving into it. The catcher, I think we all know how important the catcher's role is in a baseball game, but it's been hard to quantify over the years. But I think catcher framing is giving us really something to work with and something fun to talk about and look at.
Yeah, and it's a good topic for Mariner fans because Zunino was so good at it last year. And this year you get Iannetta, and Chris Iannetta is an interesting one because his story is that he was not good at getting called strikes for his pitchers, but he went and looked at the data and looked at the areas where he wasn't good and adjusted the way that he caught so that he could do that, so that he could do that better. It worked last year. And then this year, thus far, he hasn't performed very well. He's been below average. And I don't know we don't know if this is something that fluctuates year to year up and down, or if it's something where a guy who's good is always good. And there's some guys that are. Buster Posey's always good. A couple of guys on the Pirates are always good. And Iannetta is right now a guy that's bouncing around a lot. Now, it's still early. I think 17 games is tough. It's tough to draw a sample from that. But it's one thing that studies have shown is that within a season, what your number is like 20 games in tends to be pretty reflective of who you are. So maybe he's hurt. Maybe there's something that's preventing him from – I don't want to speculate that he's hurt. But maybe there's something that's preventing him from being as effective as he wants to be. And there's so many things that go into it. You have an umpire is having a lousy night.
Yeah.
You're going to get dinged for not being a good pitch framer when it's not your fault. So I want to wait it out a little bit with him, but right now he's a little below average.
That's a great point because I'm thinking about a game in Texas in particular, a windy day in Texas where – frankly, the umpire didn't have a very good day, and Iannetta, I think it came across, it didn't come across as a good night for Iannetta because in terms of pitch framing, and I wonder, you know, when we're talking about, 17 games?
Yep.
How much that can affect the sample? That will be interesting to watch as we move forward.
It can affect you a pretty decent amount. I'm actually looking right now. I think I found the game that you're referring to, the game that the Mariners lost 7-3, and he had a rough game that day. That was the first game of the series against the Rangers a couple of weeks ago. I think that's the game. Or wait, now are you talking about the opening week of the season? Because there was a game the opening week of the season where he really had a rough game.
It may be.
Regardless, against the Rangers, had a couple of tough ones.
Yeah, interesting. And I know I've been fascinated, too, by the Pirates because I feel like they were the first team, at least publicly, that really made an effort to go after catchers and pitch framing, identify this as important. And I think it's really helped their pitching staff when you look at what they've done through the past few years.
Yeah, so the Pirates have Chris Stewart and Francisco Cervelli. And I actually talked to Francisco Cervelli about this. And I really liked the way that he said the way that what makes you a good pitch receiver? He said you have to love the ball. I thought that was if you were going to explain it in three words, that was a great way to do it.
That is perfect. That's a great description.
Yep.
Well, it's such a neat skill, and I've really liked watching Mike Zunino. Obviously, not this year at the big league level, but it really is almost like a sleight of hand when you really concentrate on watching what a catcher does with the mitt. It's actually a very fun skill to watch when you're paying attention to it.
Yeah, it's funny, and the pitchers are all amazed by it. Another guy that talked about it, Addison Reed, who's a reliever for the Mets, said that he's watched some of the Met catchers, and he said, I don't know how they do it. He says they can take a ball that's 4 inches off the plate and do this magical hand thing, and it's suddenly right over the plate.
That's great. Well, I have another big, broad, general question for you, because I think the makeup of the National League this year is very interesting. When you have some teams that have really stripped down their rosters, like the Reds and Brewers and Phillies, although they're playing pretty well right now. And as a numbers guy, how do you look at the National League that seems so top-heavy and not much middle ground, just in terms of how numbers shake out.
I think you kind of nailed it. Although it's funny, the Phillies are kind of playing spoiler to that just a little bit. But there are, I feel like it's so hard to get a gauge on the teams. Like, I'm looking at the Mets and the Nationals or the Cubs and the Pirates. Like, the Nationals, the first 10, 12 games of the season, played the worst teams in the sport. So how do I get a gauge for who they really are? Yeah. I think the way to do that is when you see all the top teams play against each other, and you, like, ideally want, if you're at the very top, you better be beating the Braves and the Brewers and the Padres and the junk teams. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, you're going to pay the price. I think this could be a year in the National League where you could see, like, shoot, where 93 might not get it done in the National League wild card, because there are going to be some teams that are going to, like, the Mets and the Nationals are so good. The Pirates and the Cubs could be, or the Cardinals could be so good. The Dodgers, if they can get it going, could be really good. That's a little bit of a convoluted, wandering answer to your question, but it does. I don't like it very much. I wish that the teams that were at the bottom were better.
No, I agree. And then individually, too, I feel like some of the dominant starters, and we've already seen Arrieta throw a no-hitter, I think some of those guys are going to rack up some ridiculous numbers, especially in terms of strikeouts and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And strikeouts are already pretty high this year to begin with, but Scherzer, Strasburg, Syndergaard, Arrieta, Garrett Cole, Kershaw, Bumgarner, they're going to be some big numbers put up this year in the National League.
No doubt. Well, Mark, this was great. I always appreciate the time. I love the conversation. Thanks so much for the time.
Sure, no problem.
Mark Simon, ESPN Stats Info blog. You can see him on Twitter, a must-follow on Twitter, at MSimonESPN. Fantastic, as always. Always love visiting with Mark Simon. Now we're going to hand it off to Aaron Goldsmith, a chance to visit with Greg Green. A lot of fun coming up at Safeco Field.
We are joined on the phone by the director of all things cool for the Seattle Mariners, Greg Green. You know him as Gigi. It's good to have you, Gigi. This is, the Mariners have been gone for a while, Greg. We're finally coming back home, and we've got some fine promotions coming up. We just heard a commercial for the Beard Hat Night. Can you tell us about the latest Beard Hat?
Yes, I can tell you about the latest Beard Hat. It's awesome. It's a little fuzzier. You know, it's got a little more texture to it. But it's going to be a really fun Friday night at the ballpark. You got the Beard Hat, College Night. Felix is going to be on the hill. We've got that cool T-shirt commemorating his strikeout feat. And we got one more surprise up our sleeve, which we'll announce here in a day or two. So Friday night is going to be a lot of fun at the ballpark.
That's going to be huge. You know, you bring up the new Kings Court T-shirt. I saw this on the Twitter scroll last night, Gigi, but this is a kind of an historic Kings Court T-shirt, is it not?
Yeah, we're doing a commemorative T-shirt to celebrate the new Mariners all-time K King, and there'll be your only chance to get it in the King's Court on Friday night. There'll be a commemorative K card as well to celebrate that milestone, and it should be a big, loud court come Friday night against the world champion Kansas City Royals.
Oh, that's fantastic. Hey, we've been talking from time to time about Nelson Cruz and the Cruz Boomstick bobblehead. Can you tell us more?
Yes, we got the first bobblehead leading off with Nelson Cruz. He doesn't get to bat leadoff very often, but he's going to bring a big stick on Saturday night. The game time changed to 7. Fans can get there early for Boomstick bobblehead. Come in early and be one of the first 20,000 fans to get that. And you know what? We got a really good lineup this homestand. If you got a minute, I'll take you to the first pitch lineup this week. Starting off leadoff Monday, we're bringing out King Five's home team that just recently retired. Linda Byron, Jeff Renner, Dennis Downs, and Gene Anderson are going to be in the house. We'll honor them on Monday. Tuesday, Hugh Fernie, who's taking the clipper around the world in that yacht race, will be with us. Friday, more to come on that. We'll have an announcement soon about Friday's first pitch, but Saturday, Brenna Stewart, the Storm's number one overall pick, is going to be in the house Saturday to throw out the first pitch.
Nice.
For LeBron James of women's basketball, and Sunday, Ozzie Alonso from your Seattle Sounders. So a great first pitch lineup, soon to get even better with the announcement here soon.
Yeah, Gigi, I like to think of you as the LeBron of promotions, just so you're aware.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that is the first time I've ever heard that, and probably will be the last as well.
Hey, you know, Gigi, as we are sitting here in the booth in Anaheim, the Little League Parade is going on here, Little League Day here at the ballpark, and I know that's something that the Mariners do every Saturday, or pardon me, every Sunday morning at Safeco, and that has to be, I know it is for us, one of the great sights at Safeco Field before each game with Sunday mornings.
Yeah, it is. We have our first Little League Day coming up on Sunday, May 1st, a week from today, and it will start a parade of 25,000 Little Leaguers coming out to the ballpark. You know, we have one of the longest traditions in baseball with the Little Leagues doing these parades and these events. You know, we've had major leaguers down in those parades. I know Willie Bloomquist, who was the pride of Port Orchard, was down in the Little League parades down in the Kingdome. And, you know, who knows? We probably have a few more major leaguers down there touring the ballpark. But it's always great to get the Little Leaguers out and participating. There's four Little League days this year. There's a youth baseball day at the end of June. And we love having them out to the ballpark.
25,000, Gigi? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, over the course of four games, we'll get upwards of 20,000 to 25,000 kiddos and parents and coaches. And, you know, you can hear them on Sunday, too. They're loud. They make a lot of noise.
They do.
They're coming from the view level, and they have a great time. I'm bringing my team, the Blue Rockets, will be out on May 15th for that Little League Day, which should be a lot of fun and chaotic and sugar-filled. But it's a great time for the kiddos.
Hey, LeBron, this has been great catching up with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Jordan.
There he is, Greg Green.
And finally, this is Rick Riz from a few years ago with the great Vin Scully.
He's starting only his 61st season in the broadcast booth for the Dodgers. Started with the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1949-1950. The great Vin Scully. Vin, how in the world did you go from Fordham University and a year later, you're in the broadcast booth with Red Barber and Connie Desmond? What do you remember about your first broadcast with the Brooklyn Dodgers?
The very first game was an exhibition game in Vero Beach, the Dodgers playing the Philadelphia Athletics. Jimmy Dykes was the manager, and Cornelius McGillicuddy, Connie Mack, was right there. And just the way you imagined him, in the dark suit, the celluloid collar, the straw hat, exactly, I met him. And in the course of that game, sitting alongside Red, scared to death, I used to do one inning, or, you know, they would bring me along. And in that game, I forget who did it, but a Dodger hit into a triple play. And Red called it so effortlessly, so easily. And I thought, oh, my gosh, what would I do in a mess like that? And he made it sound so easy, you know. Right. So that was the very first game, yeah.
I recall as a kid growing up on the south side of Chicago listening to Jack Brickhouse mm-hmm. and Vince Lloyd and Lou Boudreau.
Bob Elson
yeah. in Chicago. And I thought, you know, that's what I want to do. When was the seed planted in your mind that you wanted to be a major league broadcaster?
When I was 8 years old, which is right after the discovery of fire, I was in grammar school, and the nuns wanted us to write a composition on what you wanted to be when you grew up. And the boys all wanted to be doctors, lawyers, policemen, firemen, etc. And the girls wanted to be ballet dancers and movie stars and whatever, yeah. nurses. And I wanted to be a sports announcer at eight. Now, remember, in those days, I think the only thing we had was college football on radio. Yeah. We had a big old radio in the living room, and I used to crawl under the radio and listen to the game with my head on a pillow on the crossbar that kept the legs together. Uh-huh. So my head was directly underneath the loudspeaker. So when the crowd would roar, it was really like water coming out of a shower head. And it would thrill me. And I used to lay there listening to whatever game, Tennessee-Alabama, meant nothing to a kid in New York. But the crowd absolutely hypnotized me. And that's when I thought, A, I'd love to be there. B, I'd love to be doing what that fella Ted Using is doing, or Bill Stern. And that's where it started, at eight.
Vin, the Dodgers make the move from Florida, Vero Beach. They were there for many, many years, and now they're here in Arizona for the second year at this beautiful complex. But going back to the 50s, what was it like when the Dodgers left Brooklyn? How tough was it for the fans there? Because the Dodgers were beloved. They were a neighborhood ball club. And how tough was it for you to make that move to the West Coast, to Los Angeles?
Well, remember the Giants also left, but the Giants didn't draw the attention that the Dodgers drew. And it was painful to some extent to tear up your roots because everything I had in this world was back there. I was just in the process of getting married, so at least I was starting a new life in many ways. Right. So I did look forward to that. Above all, I was extremely thankful that I had the job because I found out there was a lot of controversy in Southern California. The Dodgers should use our local announcers. But Walter O'Malley was a man who really thrived on loyalty. And Jerry Doggett and I were kept and brought, to Southern California. And it didn't take that long to enjoy it. Everything was fresh and new. We missed Brooklyn, of course, but we didn't go back to New York. Remember, we were in L.A. in 58. We didn't go back to New York till 62. So there was a nice period there of adjustment, so to speak, and it wasn't too bad. For the people in Brooklyn, it had to, tear their heartstrings, but that's the way it goes,
After all these years, what keeps you going, Benny?
I love this game. I tried to play it. I played it varsity high school, varsity college. I guess my biggest claim to fame, I played against George Herbert Walker Bush. And we played golf together many years later, and I said to Mr. President, as long as you're in the White House, you can say anything you want. But the day we step out of the White House, remember, we both went 0-for-3, and he loved that, But I loved playing it, and I knew I wasn't going to go anywhere playing it, but varsity college was my limit. But when I watch these fellas play, I'm so amazed. I'm still amazed, because I know how hard it is. And they make it look so easy. So the charm for me is still there. The only thing wearing on me, or God's been good, my health's been good and all that, is, and not the travel, but away from home. You get to an age, where you're sitting in a hotel room and you can hear the meter ticking. And that meter, that's your life. And you're thinking, what am I doing here in Cincinnati? Or, I should be home. That's what's pulling at me and will eventually determine this year whether I'll continue or not.
Scared the heck out of us a few days ago. How do you feel?
I feel good. Not best, but I had a very bad fall, combination of things where I blacked out, jumped out of bed too soon, landed backwards on a marble floor, and thank goodness I'm a thick-headed Irishman, and I've got a big cut in my head and a bad arm, but I'm okay. I've got a lot to be thankful for, and I'm here. So how bad can it be?